Hi, you're listening to another sermon from Deep Creek Anglican Church.
Visions and hope for the future. We long for this to be a place where our young people grow in the knowledge of Jesus and that they will be the next generation of leaders in the church. And yet, what will life be like for them as they follow Jesus? What will life be like for those who claim allegiance to one King, Jesus, in the future? If you, like me, love to have a plan, if no study period is ready to be started until you have an hourly, maybe a half hourly, 15-minute breakdown of how you're going to use that time, even if the first 2 hours are making that plan, you'll know how soothing it is to know what is to come. You'll know that it is so useful for our anxiety to have very little uncertainty in our future. And you'll know what it's like having been through the last few years, as I have, to know that the best laid plans often have very little to do with what is really on its way. We'd love for the book of Revelation to provide us with a plan day by day, year by year, perhaps hour by hour for the next generation. What will it be like for our young people to know Jesus? And yet the book of Revelation is less like a linear plan than a repeated vision, a recapitulation, if you like, of the events of now and the future from the perspective of heaven. We are used to seeing things in a narrative going one after the other. If there are seven seals, then they must open chronologically, and what happens follows the next. If there are seven trumpet blasts, then they come after the seals, and then each one describes an age to come and following. If there are seven bowls of wrath, seven plagues poured out, then each one of those must be, we think, linear and chronological. And yet in the book of Revelation, that's not the case. John is seeing a vision of the future, yes, but also now from the perspective of heaven. And he sees the same truths, but over and over again in a deepening, building, connecting way. And remember that symbols in Revelation are symbols. Numbers are symbols. And when you have seven seals, seven trumpets that will come in chapters 8 to 11, seven plagues, seven bowls, we are looking at a truth explained in its completeness over and over again. And we can see for ourselves not simply what is to come, but we're actually seeing this precise moment in time as seen from the future. I have no idea who created this amazing art installation, and I doubt that they meant it to describe the book of Revelation, but it's really useful for us when we're reading this text, because the book of Revelation has been painted in ways in our popular culture, in what's known as dispensationalism, which came out of the US, as something which tells us the future with calendar dates and chronology. But actually, it is something that is meant to comfort the saints now. It is describing this moment in time and what is to come as seen from a heavenly future. But we do love a plan, and it is essential for us to know what God's plans are for the earth, for us to live with the peace that we need. Isaiah 29 speaks of a terrible situation where even the people of God cannot access the plans of God because they have turned away from him. And the description that Isaiah gives to them is this whole vision, that is God's plan for humankind and God's response to what is going on now. It's nothing to you but words sealed in a scroll. And even if you can read, you can't read this. And even if you can read, you can't open this. The response of God to this human history and human present is something we need to know in order to have peace. And so when John, in chapter 4 and 5, has come into the throne room to see finally God's perspective on human history, present, and future, and he sees a scroll with seven seals, he weeps because no one is found worthy, no one is able to explain to him God's response to human history, present, and future. What is the plan? But an angel tells him to weep no more, because there is one. The Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, has triumphed. He is able to open the scroll and its seven seals. There is one who is worthy, who can know the Father's heart, as he explained to St. Philip. There is one who through his death and resurrection has proven himself to know exactly what it is to be a human, what it was meant to be a human, and what it can be through the salvation of his death and resurrection. And so Jesus then takes the scroll and can open its seals, not to reveal the future, as in a calendar, but to reveal God's response, God's plan for humanity at every point on the earth. And so he opens these seals, and we meet one of the most iconic group of figures that has come out of the book of Revelation and into popular imagination, the four horsemen of the apocalypse. When we had an earthquake in Melbourne last year or the year before, people could not help but make jokes and memes connecting COVID, earthquakes, floods, fires with the horsemen of the apocalypse. If you've watched any slightly unvirtuous TV made by Terry Pratchett or Neil Gaiman, you will have met these four horsemen. And sometimes it's useful to see how they're painted and how people can see that things like war, pestilence, famine, death, and conquest are part of an unfolding of a spiritual and eternal history and future. And so here we meet these horsemen, But as I've said to you before, and I will keep saying, we need to always ground the symbolism in Revelation in the Old Testament. And particularly you'll find it in these books, Daniel, Zechariah, Ezekiel, Isaiah, Exodus, and Genesis. In Zechariah, we find four horsemen. They are sent out from the four corners of the earth, from the four winds of the earth, to go and do God's bidding across all of creation. In Zechariah, they're neutral to positive. But here in the vision John receives in Revelation, he sees horsemen being sent out. He understands that they are on a mission from God to the whole of creation. But here they are not neutral and definitely not positive. They are bringing the curse and consequence of human sin upon the world. I don't know if you've ever seen one of those movies where an alien or a robot or someone who has come from the past sits and watches newsreels of human war and conquest and famine. In The Fifth Element, Lilu sits there and watches, looks up war and just sees picture after picture of human destruction, of humanity fighting humanity, and she's crying, "Are we worth it? Computers, you know, or AI that are going to take over the world," and they scroll through all of human history to decide whether they should destroy us or not, usually think, no, we're not worth saving. Because they see the results of human sin all too clearly when seen from an outside perspective. And here these horsemen are God's ordained consequence for sin upon the earth. But they are not horsemen that are still to come. This is happening now. There may be an intensifying of some of these things in the last days. But in many ways, Jesus says, these are the last days. We are waiting for his return, just as those who saw him go up into heaven did. And these last days are still characterized by great pain, persecution, famine, death, revolution, war, plague, terrible racism. This is a planet that almost seems not worth saving. And to even make the situation more painful for John, he sees the souls of the martyrs, those who have been killed for their faith in Jesus Christ. It is of comfort to him to know that they are held in heaven with God. This is an important truth, that many have died on the earth, but the ones who have died with faith in Christ, and not just martyrs, but those who have died in Christ, are not waiting to be in his presence. They are there now. This speaks to us now. Whilst the war and famine and pestilence and inflation, did you catch that? That when the rider comes out, the third rider, he says, He holds a pair of scales. I heard what sounded like a voice among the living creatures say, 2 pounds of wheat for a day's wages and 6 pounds of barley for a day's wages, and do not damage the oil and the wine. The basics are almost impossible for the common folk to afford, and yet the oil and the wine, the really good stuff, is still there for the wealthy who can have whatever they want. This is not something for the future. This is now. This has always been part of the consequence of sin. Inequality, poverty, famine, war, death, and asleep before the final judgment, but not for those who have died in Christ. So John, when he opens the fifth seal, when Jesus opens the fifth seal, sees the those who have died in Christ safe in heaven under the altar in the temple of God, in the heavenly temple of God, and yet they are crying out. And it is the only prayer of supplication in the whole of the book of Revelation. They are there slaughtered like their master, same language as the lamb who was slain, that we read in chapter 5. They are there slain like their master, and they cry out, "How long, Sovereign Lord, holy and true, until you judge the inhabitants of the earth and avenge our blood?" It's easy to skip over this fifth seal because we are intrigued by the horsemen, who are symbols. But actually, this cry, this prayer of supplication by those that have suffered for their faith, who've lived in a way that has been countercultural and have been marginalized in whatever way, extreme or mild, this cry is one of the keys to the whole book of Revelation. Because they are calling for God to act. And you and I might, as someone who's frustrated with a chess game or a Monopoly game, just kick the whole thing over. Get rid of it. I've had enough. And they're saying, "God, can you do that, please? Look at the way the pieces on the board are killing each other. Look at the inequality between the pawns and the king or the queen or the knight." So, you know, that's not pertinent necessarily to last night, but maybe. "Look at the pain on the earth. Kick it over. How long?" Just like the saints of old in the Psalms, "How long, O Lord?" But they, in their safety with God, in this present moment, are given a white robe to be part of the family of Jesus, and they are told to wait a little longer. And so perhaps if it were you and I, we would expect that the next seal might reveal how long a little longer might be. What's to come? When will it happen? How long is a little while? But instead, at the sixth seal, we do not get an answer to how long. We get an answer that says, "It will come." I watched as he opened the sixth seal. There was a great earthquake. The sun turned black like sackcloth made of goat hair. The whole moon turned blood red. The stars fell. The heavens rolled up. There will be a day where what is happening on the board is shown in all its fullness, and it will be wiped clean. And just so that you know that this is a symbol and a picture and something that is not chronological, even after the whole thing is rolled up, then the kings of the earth, the princes, the generals, the rich, the mighty, and everyone else, slave and free, are hiding. This is a symbol, a picture. When you see a blood moon, sure, be freaked out. It's kind of weird. But this is a symbol, a picture. Because at the same time as the whole of creation is being wrapped up, the people on the earth are still on the earth, able to hide in a cave. This is symbol and this is picture to communicate this one truth. The great day is coming, and who will stand? In 1939, this classic movie was released, one of the first to use Technicolor, The Wizard of Oz. And we love to follow the journey of these who are looking for everything that they need to have peace in their lives, to go home, to get a brain, to get a heart, to get courage. And they seek to come to the wizard who rules everything. And when they arrive, they find smoke, they find rumblings and loud noises and a huge figure. And yet Toto the dog, sorry for spoilers, if you haven't seen it, you've literally had 80, 90 years or something. Toto the dog discovers that this great wizard, the one who had promised to be able to do it all for them, who ran this munchkin land, was actually just a small, weak man behind the curtain. And if you go and have a, if you watch it, you know, you see the 1930s technology and he's twisting the buttons and he's, you know, what they would imagine in this day and age. Actually, it's terrifying to think about how good the technology would be behind the curtain. But this is almost what we have come to expect in our world. Every time we see a promise that something is going to be fixed, that the board will be kicked over, that this is going to be the new time, this will be the future that we've longed for, we just find someone weak and powerless and corrupt behind a curtain. And we long to see, you know, in the coronation perhaps or something else, a true hero, something that will really make a difference. And yet, I don't know, if you listened to that ABC commentary for hours before it last night, I'm assuming you didn't because maybe you watched it on Channel 7 or you, I don't know. But anyway, it was too much even for me, and you know how lefty I am. It was crazy. Just behind the curtain, we know we're going to be let down. We know that this is all there is, and the mess and the pain, the answer to how long? But when John comes into the throne room of heaven, when he sees the unveiling behind the curtain into heaven, he sees the center of true power, true majesty, where nothing takes the king by surprise and where everyone who trusts in him is truly protected, even in the midst of the greatest pain and tragedy and persecution and suffering. And so he sees, and you remember the number symbols from last week if you were here and I was prancing around, which people much preferred, I believe. that 12 and 24 are the numbers in Revelation for the people of God. That 7 is the number of full and complete, and 6 is for not complete. You'll see that later, but we'll also see it now. We're just at the 6th seal. And 4 is something that affects or represents all creation. We had the 4 winds, we had the 4 horsemen. But here, there is 144,000 from all the tribes of Israel. And Bob read them all for us, 12,000 from this tribe, 12,000 from that tribe. Rather than seeing nothing and weakness and disappointment behind the curtain, before the 7th seal is even opened, John sees the full number of all God's people, protected and brought to their purpose to worship him. And if you've ever chatted to a Jehovah's Witness, you'll know that they find this symbolic language hard to leave in the symbolic. And they have a literal understanding that there will be 144,000 spirit sons of God, and then there'll be the rest of us. But actually, you'll see just in the way that John kind of has these circling backgrounds, or sees the same thing, or just like a movie would watch something from different angles, or sports. You know, you'd see the goal kicked from here, and then you'd see it from over there, and then over there, and up there, and down, all the ways. John actually hears the sound of the 144,000, and then he turns to look at the 144,000, and what does he see? A great multitude that no one could count, from every nation, tribe, people, and language, standing before the throne and before the Lamb. The whole earth called, even in the midst of these horsemen pouring out the consequences of sin, us living in this broken world, come before the Lamb. And they cry out. You'll see the flags there representing all the nations of the Commonwealth. Do you remember, if you've been here for a long time at Deep Creek, we used to have flags all along the walls. It was before my time in leadership, but not before my time in coming here for different things. It was always really special. Well, flags can be a bit problematic for people these days, and what it means for them to see on their flag maybe a representative of another religion or a philosophy that they don't hold to. But here in Revelation, the picture of the people of God is from every nation, tribe, people, and language standing before the throne and before the Lamb. The suffering, well, we're going to have a chance to explore that more. The state of the martyrs, we're going to have a chance to explore that more. But the central reality for all of us is that everyone is invited. Every single nation, there are 6,500 languages spoken on the earth at the moment. And I'm sure there are many, many, many thousands that are lost to us. All coming before the throne and the Lamb. In just a few moments, we're going to share Holy Communion. And for us here at Deep Creek, when we do that with brothers and sisters whose first language is not English, or whose background is so different from ours, we don't pat ourselves on the back and say, look at us ticking our diversity and inclusion goals for this month. We say, oh my goodness, this is what the full, complete presence of God does in a place. It brings people from every nation, every tribe, every language, because Jesus is just that good. Because his plan for the world is just that big. that those four horsemen, even though they seem so exciting to us, are almost nothing, almost lost in the enormity of this picture of the whole world coming to give praise and glory and wisdom and thanks and honour and power and strength forever and ever.